with champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on. Turn it up.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Make yourself at my home. Tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby. Cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in. And you know where I live. Yeah, you know what we is. Sometimes you gotta stay in.
And we welcome you inside the Dog Bowl in Berea, Ohio. Jason Gibbs and Andrew Gribble, otherwise known as Gribbs and Gibbs. In the hot seat today, as Zagura, I don't know where Zagura is. I don't even know what he was doing today. He got one day off.
That Barrio Schmedium t-shirt is, let's hope it's still intact. Ready to go for game seven.
Does he even know what day it is?
We'll see what he's doing. And I actually contacted him last night after the game to praise the t-shirt. He seemed in a good place at that point.
I can only imagine it got better as the evening continued on after the Cavs game last night. Happy Friday, Cleveland. You have a game seven Sunday night. Winner take all, 8 o'clock. Golden State and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now I know that this is Browns Daily. I know we've got diehard Browns fans listening all over the world, all over the United States, and all, of course, right here in Cleveland. But you would be crazy if you did not talk about the hottest thing going in all of professional sports right now, and it is the one and only Cleveland Cavaliers. An amazing game last night, Gribbs, 115-101, and really wasn't even that close last night.
And, you know, I'd say this lately because I think game five might have previously been my best Cavs memory, but last night is easily the best. It had everything you kind of wanted in a game outside of the final 3 minutes of the third quarter where I thought everything was falling to pieces and the Warriors were going to make a run and, you know, make it one of the worst losses that the Cavs could ever have. But the performance that LeBron had, the atmosphere of the queue, and then the thing that maybe I'm enjoying the most, the subsequent meltdown of the Warriors and seeing how mentally fried they are and frustrated with playing the Cavs, it's just made this game seven feel so much better, even though you're going into a place where no one has much success except the Warriors. But there's that level of excitement, enthusiasm that I don't think was ever present during last year's playoff run that has been captured now, and you feel like the momentum is all on the Cavs side, and I think there's that elimination of kind of the dread that hangs over Cleveland sports fans going into a game where, you know, it could go either way. We could come away disappointed or excited, but there's the dread that even you and I were talking about having yesterday going into game six. I don't have that going into game seven.
Yeah, yesterday at this time, Nathan Zagura said, "Gibbs, what do you think?" And he's all fired up and excited. And I don't want to be the buzzkill, but I said, "I am not feeling good. I need to be talked off the ledge." I really didn't. For every time the Cavs have had a good game in this series, they've usually laid an egg the following game. And last night was not that case. And you and I were talking about it before the show even started outside, and you said it yourself. It's fun watching a team have Cleveland-esque problems when it matters the most. And that's what's happening with Golden State right now.
Yeah.
Everything that could go wrong is going wrong.
Yeah, like I had a conversation with one of my friends who doesn't live here today, and he said, "Wouldn't it be so Cleveland if the Cavs lost Game 7? And I said, "No." I said, "What the Warriors are experiencing right now, being up 3-1, being the best regular season team of all time, having two of the greatest shooters of all time, and then having it all collapse, that would have been what you consider a Cleveland kind of moment." That's why this feels unique. It feels different. And I just, you're seeing your superstar player who many might have written off earlier in the series as being in his post-prime stage of his career, playing at as high of a level as he has his entire career. And it's not, even though that all the numbers from last year's finals for him are better, this is completely different. He's playing a different kind of basketball that has just kind of transformed this team, and you're not hearing about all the liabilities the Cavs have on their roster because he has made them better, and you're getting performances like you saw out of Tristan Thompson last night and guys elevating their performance around him, and this is, I think, the moment Cavs fans have been waiting for ever since LeBron came back.
216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show, at Andrew Gribble, at BGSU Gibbs, and at Browns underscore daily. Did I get your Twitter handle right?
You forgot the underscore.
I thought there was an underscore.
Someone snatched Andrew Gribble early in the game.
They refused
early in the Twitter
to sell
game.
It to Gribbs.
Yeah, they're not getting rid of it, so the underscore it is.
There we go. We want your tweets. We want your calls. Where were you last night? It was electric downtown. The outdoor viewing party looked like a bigger party than the party going on inside the building at times.
We almost got as much TV time as the Toronto watch party would get
yes.
on TV.
Yeah, the Toronto watch party was very popular. It was an ideal situation. So, wow, all the guys are in suits today. And look at these guys, everybody walking by. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. And as to why everybody is, but it was an amazing night. It was just watching it. You know, I was downtown for our pregame show. You could feel the vibe. It was great. No matter what was going to happen in Game 6, it was great for the city to get another game. And boy, you want to send the fans out, and you want to send them home with a winner in your last home game, no matter what happens of the season. And you did that, and then some.
Yeah, and I think the thing that made just about a week and a half ago, when the Cavs lost Game 2 the way they did, I think the big frustrating thing that the fan base was having was that, you know, we just want to – this team might be better than us, but we just want to go out and actually, like, play our game and, like, give our best shot. Because I think through those first two games, the Cavs weren't doing that. But I'll even count Game 4 where I think the Cavs just got beat by a great Warriors performance. These last four games, you've seen the best from the Cavs. And you've seen – That's where they can go toe-to-toe. Like, for them, it seems like it's unfortunate, but this series really started in Game 3 for the Cavs, it seemed like, for what they've been trying to accomplish. It maybe took them two games to figure out the Warriors, but they have. And on top of figuring them out, you've had your two stars elevate their play, and you've also had the Warriors start to break down physically. And that's kind of culminate and mentally get frustrated with what the Cavs are doing. And that's why it seems like, even though I know all the stats about the home team winning Game 7, that's why it seems like all the momentum is on the Cavs side and every last bit of pressure, despite the 52-year drought in Cleveland, is on the Warriors.
Well, and if you're going to be listening to the next 2 hours to two guys born and raised here, moved away for a couple of years, came back, and have lived and died with every single team in this city since the day we were born. And last night, I got done watching the – you know, I got home about halftime. Listened to the game on the radio and got home at halftime and was able to watch the second half of the game and just, you know, watching it with my wife. You know, she looked at me, I looked at her, and I said, "I go, they're gonna win on Sunday.
Yeah.
If this keeps up, we're gonna have a championship." And it was that moment of, well, the clouds part and the sun comes out, and it's like, are the gods going to actually smile upon this city and this town and this team for the first time since God knows how long?
Yeah, no, I just keep going over and over again. It's a different vibe. Yeah,
100%.
Than last year. And whether or not that materializes Sunday, I don't – I would sure love if the Cavs win it, but it's just – even if they lose, it's not the feeling of dread that hovered over last year.
And that's my whole thing. You've gotten to Game 7. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen now. I'm not going to be crushed. I'm going to be upset if they lose. I'm a Cleveland fan. It's going to hurt, and I'm going to be upset. I'm trying not to think that way. I have a positive outlook now. I didn't have that 24 hours ago, but watching Golden State in disarray has me in that positive frame of mind. Whatever happens, happens Sunday night. It's Game 7. There's nothing more that any of us can do except sit back and watch it and have a few libations and see where things go. So we want to ask, you know, what was your experience last night as a Cavs fan? What was going through your mind? Do you believe? I mean, I think everybody for the most part believed yesterday that we had on Browns Daily. If you weren't a believer, are you a believer now? Because all signs are pointing to this team bringing home a trophy early Monday morning or Monday afternoon, whenever they come back from Oakland, California, after Game 7. Where will you watch Game 7 at? Gribbs and I were just talking about it. You know, I've got I got a few buddies that are actually coming up that I grew up with that said, hey, I wouldn't miss this. I want to be downtown. A couple of my buddies, they want to watch the game in the suburbs. I don't know where to go. We're at a little conundrum right now. And right now, I'm only slated to work a couple hours. That could totally change the way this series has changed. Gribbs, you know, I know you were talking about it. You've got your place. I don't even know if I want to say it on the air because I don't want to give it away for you.
I want to be downtown, and I think most of my friends here want to be downtown.
I think you have to be.
You know, and I think it's great. My wife, who's 9 months pregnant, didn't grow up here. She wants to be downtown. You know, we'll manage that as best as possible. It could be a long day. You know, heck, the due date's only a few weeks away.
Yes.
Crazier things have happened. So I'm prepared to be as immersed as I possibly can, but also be in a position where I can make a quick escape if necessary.
Yeah.
That's my strategy.
That's going to be the key, because if things get crazy at the end of the night, which could happen, it's what happens when you haven't won.
Yeah. So we saw the watch party sold out in 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Finding a way out. And the watch party is at the queue. I know there were some questions with the RNC taking over early this morning.
So speaking of that too, guys, real quick, the Cavs just announced this, that they're going to do an outdoor watch party as well. So people at 2 o'clock, go to Cavs.com. There's a 4-ticket limit per person. It's a $5 donation as well, just like the inside. So they are going to do a party outside in the Gateway Plaza. So on Cavs.com at 2 o'clock, they're going to start selling tickets for that.
Is that what they've been doing the previous games, or is this different?
I think this one's different because I believe those other ones were free.
Correct.
And I think this one is just going to be like an extent. And that $5 is – it's a donation. It's going to go all back to a charitable organization. So
it goes to Cavs charities.
But plus,
this weekend you got the Indians in town, and they're
at 1 o'clock.
And they're expected to draw pretty well all weekend with it being Father's Day weekend.
And the other thing too was I saw a lot of this on Twitter. People that did get the Cavs watch party tickets, they bought them for $5. They were turning around and asking $100 a piece, like on the secondary
market.
See,
I don't know if I'd want to watch it at the queue. I think I got to be at a bar to watch it.
Well, as long as you're around people.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's – and, Gribbs, you could have the best story in the world for your future son or daughter when you can tell them that your mom was induced to labor by the Cavs winning a championship.
That would be great.
That would
be
an
awesome
story. The
first baby born – are you at Fairview?
Or, yeah.
Okay. That's where everybody goes. At Fairview Hospital, I mean,
Sure you get a Cavs blanket or a hat ready to go.
They might have them ready for you. They might already have them.
They were doing that, I think, at the clinic, right? At the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah.
Any baby that was born there, they were wrapping them in a Cavs like onesie or something.
I think all the hospitals are kind of teaming up on that. So, you know, again, where will you watch Game 7? Fontana, where are you going to watch? You live downtown. You're going to be right in the middle of this. I'm going to come to your house.
Come on over. I have a futon. You guys are more than welcome to come on over. That is the nice thing about living downtown is I will be down. I mean, guys, last night was incredible. And it was just people – I was saying on RBS, you know, I drove past the watch party real quick outside of the queue. And just people were so just jammed in there, just right next to somebody. You don't even know who it is. And you're shoulder to shoulder. But – everybody's got their eyes glued to the TV and just so much going. Cleveland felt so alive last night. Just people were out everywhere having a great time. So I'll be down. I did break my routine, though. I went to Around the Corner last night for wing night, wing and trivia night. So
what?
Yeah, I broke my tradition.
Were they still doing trivia during the game?
No, they stopped. Okay. But they did what they
Why
did.
Would you leave downtown, Fontana?
We figured we didn't want to miss wing night. We did come back downtown for a little bit, though. And the cool thing was they did a half-court shot at the end of the first quarter. My name was called, and we're not going to talk about how it went. So it was a good time.
That good, huh?
No, it was terrible. I would like to say, though, the ball was a little deflated.
Oh, that means you should be able to hold it a little bit better, it better.
It slipped right out of my hands. It didn't even get to the hoop.
Did people just boo the crowd?
No, because there were people that were worse than me. Like, they called, like, 10 names, and I was one of them. There were people that were worse than me, so I didn't feel so bad.
Jeez, Fontana.
Needless to say.
That's why you're a tight end, Fontana. Exactly.
Well, and then needless to say, the Cavs will not be calling me for, any heroics or anything on Sunday.
No, not at all. So, all right, for both of you, question on this Friday, and for all of our listeners, at 216-578-0850 or on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble, Jason at BGSU Gibbs, or at Browns_Daily. If you could give the Cavaliers one piece of advice going into Game 7, what would it be? Gribbs, we'll start with you.
just do fall in line with LeBron. That's the strategy for the Cavs. Do what
I'm
he says.
I'm a big fan of that.
He gave that great pregame speech game three, where he basically insinuated that's what he wanted them to do. When he motions over for you to give him a pick, give him a pick. You know, make your shot. I think elevate around him. When he is giving you the ball, like he was giving Tristan late in the game, do what you do best with it. I think JR early had some hesitation with some shots, but then later in the game as it was going on, he got fed the ball and he was making shots. And you need a Kyrie-like performance like you had in game five again. I think he was strong in the first half yesterday, went away a little bit in the second half. You don't want to have LeBron score 18 straight points again, but he might just do it again. You know, I know it was weird how all series were like, oh, the Splash Brothers, they can't just keep shooting like this. They're going to turn it around. They're going to have their big game. And at the same
time, they made a couple runs. They got to within seven or eight, and you were like, oh.
But then at the same time, game five happened, and everyone's like, oh, LeBron, they can't do that again. But he did. And Kyrie was pretty solid, too, up until about the third quarter. Then you didn't need him in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I was going to say, the turned ankle concerns me a little bit because I didn't feel like he was the same player after that maybe he was a little tentative, and I'm interested to see how that's responding today as they make their way out to Oakland. But, yeah, what if LeBron wants you to watch The Godfather 2 for 7 hours prior to tip-off Sunday night, please do so.
Yeah.
Fontana, what's your words of wisdom?
Kind of like what Grip said, just get the ball to 23 and get out of the way. You know, Brian Winters is on with us, and he said that in a huddle, LeBron was kind of telling the team, follow me. You know, I will lead you guys to a win, and he did. I mean, 41 points back-to-back. Now, I know he needs some help, but the guy knows what it takes to win. I think just get him the ball, kind of get out of the way. But the other thing, too, and I'm stealing this one from Terry Francona, who's on with us, keep everything the same. You know, go through your same routine. If you're out there taking shots before the game at a certain time, be out there. Do things the normal way that you do them. Even though it's game seven, even though you have a chance to end a curse here in Cleveland, you have a chance to win a championship, just do what you normally do. Relax. You know, don't lose any sleep over it. And we're going to love them. You know, we'll love this team, win or lose. So pressure's off. Go out and play well.
Yeah, it's just at this point in the series, both teams are going to be affected by jet lag the same way. You know, I don't see the Warriors having any kind of advantage. I know they made that kind of trip a lot throughout the season, but you know, you're on the same of a level right now as you ever will be with the Warriors, and I think that their confidence is shook, and you have to make the most of that. And I think the key in every one of these games this series has been starting out well.
I mean, that's the big thing, because
you can, so many teams can go into Golden State and get the doors blown off them in the first few minutes, and then you're trying to recover the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, even in the games where Golden State's won, the first quarter is where they can be the most vulnerable. Like, there was the missed opportunity of game two when the Warriors started so cold in that game. Cavs blew the opportunity, couldn't do it. Same with game one. They just couldn't make the most of that opportunity. And then when the Cavs really did maximize those opportunities, and even last night, I'm texting back and forth with my friends saying, oh, I wish the Cavs would have done even more in this first quarter. Like, they should be winning by 30.
I didn't feel
comfortable. Yeah, I was like, I didn't think they did enough, even though they're up by 20. You know, you just have to – every stop against Golden State is a victory, and you have to make the most out of that ensuing possession.
All right, we want to hear from you. It's your day to react. Cavs one win away from clinching the city's first championship in 52 years. Game 7 comes your way Sunday night. Cavaliers – fans, if you have questions, we're taking them. Comments, all that and more. Browns fans, I know you want to talk a little Browns, and if you do, good news. I have Andrew Gribble sitting right next to me here in the Dog Bowl, and he's happy to answer your Browns questions as well. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. Maybe we should name it Cavs Daily today. And it's on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
LeBron James stat line last night, 41, 11, 8, 4 steals, 3 block shots, including a fantastic block on Steph Curry that he talked an enormous amount of garbage to right after he did it, which was awesome. And Steph couldn't say a word. The biggest takeaway in 42 minutes, one turnover.
Yeah, that was huge.
What is that?
I said no lost possessions, really. I mean, you had some bad possessions.
Sure.
You had some too much dribbling, too much ISO, too much hero ball. And those some of the bad possessions were rescued by amazing shots. But yeah, I mean the Warriors defense even was better with Draymond, but not anywhere near what it was those first two games and also game four. It's just not on the same level. And I think a big reason is Bogut not being there, even though he only plays a few minutes. I think it affects
you
the
and
whole,
I disagree because I don't think Bogut's that big a deal.
I think it's a big deal. I think it affects their whole rotations. I think it trickles down. I think him being on the floor, the Cavs exploited that pretty well, but he's a pretty good rim protector and he sets good screens on offense and he gives those 12 minutes have to be distributed to other people. And I think that Iguodala being hurt just killed them on defense.
I 100%. That yeah. might be worse than anything that this team has suffered.
Yeah, I mean,
if he can't go tomorrow night, or he's not even if he's a shell of himself, they're in trouble.
And this Cavs strategy that I wish they would have implemented from game one of basically switching and getting Curry on whoever you want the ball with and attacking Curry. And even if some of the calls on him were questionable last night, put him in the position where he's in position for those questionable calls. Whereas before they were kind of tucking him away on maybe JR or someone, and he was on a lot of possessions, just not moving from the corner. You want him active and actually focusing on defense for those 24 seconds.
And we'll get to the calls here in just a second. I will say this. Yeah, the officiating was not great last night for Golden State on their behalf. It was not good for the Cavs either. It was a pretty poorly officiated game on both sides.
Yeah, I mean,
whole blame in the officials. Look, the officiating wasn't good on either way last night.
No, and it can just affect you. It just seems when you're a fan of a team, you're going to see it one way, but it's like the facts kind of add up that it was pretty straightforward.
And
for
I would think the calls will go more Golden State's favor now that Steve Kerr has spoken up. You know, Ty Lue spoke up and got fined. And then the pendulum swung back to the Cavs in terms of the calls. Well, Steve Kerr spoke up. He got fined today. I would expect the pendulum to swing back, especially because it's game seven in Oakland. And I think if you're the Cavs, you got to play through it. You can't spend your time arguing with officials. I got to leave it out on the floor. I can't worry about what they're going to call or what they're, you know. They shouldn't call too tight a game. It is a game seven. You don't want to see guys getting in foul trouble in the second and third quarter. But you know, we've seen everything
like
so
the call that got Kevin Love, was it his third foul or was maybe a second foul, where he literally moved out of the way for Draymond Green to take a layup and he got called for that? I mean, that you can pick out calls left and right. It's just a matter of the calls that went against Golden State affected their best players at bad moments, and I think that's where the frustration probably comes from for them.
All right, let's get to the phones. 216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily, at Andrew_Gribble, at BGSU Gibbs. We start the show off, Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan, good afternoon. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Go Browns, go Cavs.
Amen.
I grew up in Tennessee, so I didn't have home teams. And when I was in the sixth grade, we moved out to the Bay Area, and I saw Willie Mays play, and I became a San Francisco Giants fan. So my whole life, we had never won till 2010. So if I've got a rooting interest in the Cavs now because of my affiliation with the Browns, and I can fully understand how any Cavs fan just is just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, it's like –
That was me yesterday, Dan.
Oh, my goodness. When it went to seven, you know, so buck up. You know, I remember when the Giants finally won, it seemed like things just that never went right for us just started seem to go right. So I really have my hopes up, you know.
Dan, thanks for the call. Have a great Father's Day weekend. Appreciate it. you just, I don't know. I mean, it's the Cleveland curse. It's the OIC syndrome. I'm waiting for something bad to happen. And by the end of last night, I said, no, I'm through this. I'm over this. You got to be bigger than this.
Yeah.
It's a big moment. It's not that I'm not supporting my team. All week, I just had this, you're down 3-1. How are you going to come back when you've shown me nothing? And then in the last two games, you've shown me everything. And in a week's time, they're not going to be the favorites because naturally you're on the road and a road game in game seven, Vegas isn't going to make you the favorite. But they might as well be the favorites right now with everything they're doing right.
Yeah, and I feel maybe it helps that in my head, I feel like the Cavs have already lost the series twice. I felt like that after game two. I felt like I'd already moved on after that performance in Golden State where it felt like the Cavs were going to get swept. And after game four, you feel like at that moment, I think a lot of people just thought it was over. And I think you felt that kind of losing moment at that time. So I think that for me has helped in why I'm so optimistic about game seven. I felt like I've already moved past the dread portion of the series.
I am through the dread. I got through it last night when I watched Golden State fighting amongst themselves, picking things apart. That's what I was surprised at the most. Steve Kerr, after the game, whining about calls and things. Steve Kerr, you're better than that.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr is definitely better than that. I think he lost his way, and as a result, his team's lost their way.
Yeah, but it's a team that a very good problem to have. They don't go through this very much. You know, they don't lose consecutive games very often. I think they've done it twice in the playoffs, but they never had it during the regular season this past year, and they've never lost three straight under Kerr. I mean, this is uncharted territory for them, and the craziest stat is that if they lose Game 7, they will have lost as many games in the playoffs as they did in the regular season. Which is just incredible to think about. I mean, they've gone through more losing in this playoffs than they went through over a 7-month stretch during the regular season. So this is new adversity for them. For even though
that's amazing.
Even though they were mostly the same team as last year and they weren't as good last year in the regular season, I think this is the losing 3 of 4, which is what they've done. It's just rare for them, and I think that. You call them what it is that they're bad losers because they don't lose very often, and I don't think they maybe know how to handle it very well.
All right, back to the phones we go. Josh in Chicago. Josh, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Not too much, man.
So I'm going to be in town this weekend. Decided that I'm coming in for Game 7. My future mother-in-law is in town. We were supposed to do some wedding planning on Sunday, but I canceled all that.
That is a good move on your part.
Text my friends last night coming into town. Definitely want to go to a bar to watch it. Don't want to miss that party. And I just want to say that I think that after the curse for 52 years, for us to actually win it, it's going to take a miraculous thing to happen. It wasn't going to come easy. I think it's going to happen. Looking forward to it.
What would your advice be to the Cavaliers? Your Ty Lue, your pregame speech. What's one piece of advice you're giving this team before they take the floor Sunday night?
You know, I think that they have a really calm demeanor right now, which is good. And the pressure is really not on them. Let's be serious. 73 wins for the Warriors. They need to go out and play their game like they have. Give it their all, and I think good things will happen. Live with the results, right?
Yeah, amen to that. Josh, have a great weekend. We'll see you here in town and enjoy what should be a hell of a party on Sunday, win or lose. What do you think about that? Is all the pressure back on Golden State now?
Completely. I think because – if Golden State wins Sunday, this is what they were supposed to do from the moment they rattled off, 20-some wins to start the season. And for the fact that they had a team buried 3-1. I mean, you go up 3-1, you're supposed to win the series. And I think there's a lot of pressure there, and I think if you enter the offseason with a loss, if the Warriors do, then you've got questions about the makeup of your roster, the mental makeup. You've got – questions around Harrison Barnes' free agency coming up and things like that, and it's going to turn into, you know, how do they ever possibly recover from a demoralizing finals loss? And I think that you know, they won it last year, so they probably have that entitled feeling that they're going to be a dynasty, and I think that that's in danger. Whereas the Cavs, you know, with LeBron, your window is obviously shrinking, but I think the Cavs went through that a regular season, the most adverse perceivably a worst regular season ever for a one seed out of a conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they went through so much during the regular season, whereas
there was no
I
such
feel
thing
like,
as cruise control.
Yeah. So I feel like the Cavs have already faced that pressure, and they've faced this feeling that they've been a disappointment throughout the regular season. And now that they've come back and done something that no team has since 1966, just to get it to a game seven, I think that's why they can go in there with kind of that house money feeling. And I was joking earlier that the Cavs have already done something that I'm very impressed with, is that they've turned the general public on Golden State. The Warriors are no longer, it seems like, this public darling team and that everyone loves them. I'm sure Steph Curry is still incredibly popular with kids, but it's just
you know
people
what,
are
though?
Turning on them.
I was talking to Wendy this morning, and I said, you know, one of my buddies asked me a great question last night. He goes, do you think that Steph's reputation has been tarnished by this series? And he goes, I think there's a dent in it.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, this is the second straight finals where he hasn't really done a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think I'll give him this. I think he played well yesterday.
Yeah.
I think he had 30 points. His defense is not very good, but no. I think this was one of his better games. He just didn't have Clay show up in the first half, and Clay was single-handedly trying to rescue them in the third quarter, but it just wasn't enough. They weren't in sync with how good they were playing together. But there were some moments last night where he was making some shots where I was like, oh, this
is
good.
Yeah, I disagree with Zagura the whole time when he's like, he stinks. He doesn't stink.
No.
There's a reason he's one of the premier players in the league. And maybe he's not getting a lot of shots because the Cavs are defending him, and they're throwing everything at him and forcing everybody else to pick up their play, and Golden State just hasn't figured that out yet in the last couple
of years. I think when you're facing a team that makes you work on every possession on defense, it's going to affect your shooting on unguarded shots. Like, that's where his percentage has gone way down. He's making some tough shots. It's the ones where he's pretty open that he's missing that he usually makes, because I think in the regular season, you just don't put that much effort into a game plan to really run him around, whereas – now you've got 2 days to prepare. You know what you're going to do, and you attack him to make him worse on the offensive end.
Let's go to Brian in Strongsville now. Brian, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850.
How you doing, guys?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. I had a question. I had heard this morning that with Curry throwing his mouthpiece into the stands, so to speak, that you would get an automatic suspension for the next game, the NBA rule. Is that true?
That is not true.
Not true, and he's already been fined, so I think that ship has sailed. He's not going to get suspended.
Yeah.
Okay. That hope is over.
Yeah, no. That's – yeah, thanks for the phone call, man.
The difference is Udonis Haslem got suspended because he threw a mouthpiece at an official.
Yes.
That's where it – and since he was just throwing his in a general direction, I think that's where they just find him.
Well, and I'm not trying to defend Steph Curry, but the person who hit it said Steph like went right up to him and apologized, said he didn't mean to do that, and Steph said he didn't mean to purposely throw it at somebody. Granted, again, childish of him to do it at all, but yeah, I don't think he purposely meant to hit somebody with it.
Yeah, and let's be honest. The NBA's not – even if LeBron had done that, the NBA isn't suspending the star players for Game 7. The NBA, this is unless they do something so egregious that it warrants it, which there was a moment where I thought Draymond Green was going to pick up two techs last night late in the game when he got into the official's face. And I said, boy, you better be careful. Better be careful. Yeah. Pick up one, and it's easy to pick up the second one once you've already got the first one.
Yeah, Kerr stepped in there right away. He knew what was going on. I mean, he knew that that Draymond was in trouble if he was going to stay on the court. He put him right on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. All right, 216-578-0850. We will read your tweets coming up next. We'll take your phone calls. We'll do a little sound, sound from last night and from this morning. And we'll play the Friday forecast. All that and more, Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
I've been counting all my steps, all my nose just turned to yes. Silently, I must confess.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Starting over once again,
this is where it all begins. I'm getting U.S. Open updates from Matt Fontana in my ear. Should we not go to sleep on Sergio, who just drove the green, I was told?
Yeah, par four. I don't get this. It's a par four, 300 yards, so he just drove it onto the green. But good for him.
Good for him is right.
He's one under.
All right, we're taking your calls today. Game 7, Cavaliers-Warriors, Sunday night at 8 o'clock. And also on Twitter, at Browns underscore daily, at Andrew underscore Gribble, at BGSU Gibbs. Our good friend G.I. George, Curry's tantrum is emblematic of the Warriors because the team is a reflection of their coach. That's what we talked about earlier with Kerr.
I say the criticizing the officials after game 6 seemed out of character for him, but there might not be a guy that works the officials more during a game than Kerr.
Yeah, there was a message there without being insulting. You know, to the point where you're not going to get calls. Now you're just at least opening officials' eyes up to what you're seeing.
So I feel like Lou is almost an enigma with former players who become coaches, because I feel like the former players get so incensed by officiating much more so than maybe the other guys who weren't former NBA players and things like that. I may just be generalizing, but it just seems like Kerr takes a lot of that stuff during the game personally, where you don't see Lou break his composure much at all.
Never. Do you see him laughing last night when Curry was sitting on the, you know, he went over and apologized to the kid whose dad's the minority owner of the Cavs, mind you. And Curry's sitting there and he's waiting, they're reviewing the tape, and he looks over at Lou and he says something and Lou's just laughing. I mean, he's not rattled. You don't see, it's very rare you see Lou get upset or get too excited. It's never one or the other. It's literally right down the middle of the road.
I sort of love that these teams by the seventh game truly hate each other. That's something I really enjoy in an NBA series.
There
I mean, it's pretty clear that
it's
going to
get chippy
along
from the get go. I think,
yeah,
on Sunday.
And I think that there's maybe more of that than maybe you saw between the Warriors and Thunder by the end of their series. Like you play 7 games against anyone over a few weeks, you're not going to really be friends by the end of it.
No. G.I. George also tweets at us, my pregame advice for the Cavs is to keep Ayesha Curry tweeting. How about though? What do you make of that last night? And I'll say this. You know, there was a bunch of celebs that showed up. They actually had to shut down, like, the small runway at Burke Airport. KYC was tweeting it out last night. Betsy Kling was tweeting out all the private planes and everything. And I guess they basically had to shut down the underground entrance because Jay-Z and Beyonce showed up and left the busloads of Warrior family members sitting outside. They didn't get in right away. That's called payback. That's called payback for jacking up the price for the Cavs families to travel and putting them in, like, horrible seats as opposed to where you had them down low in the corner last year.
Yeah, and I was just when I was saying this before the I was saying this before the show, but it's like I was kind of amazed by the level of celebrity here for these games. I think Beyonce and Jay-Z that's as high as it gets. I mean, as much as I will stand up for Cleveland and say how great of a city it is and how far it's come, I worry that the perception wasn't out there and that Beyonce and Jay-Z would not be up for coming here. But they did. Jamie Foxx was there downtown. I mean,
do you remember the pitcher Bruce Chen?
Yeah.
Last night, Brenda's going through, we're doing the pregame show, and he says, hey, Beyonce and Jay-Z are here, Jamie Foxx, Les Miles, the Mad Hatter was in attendance last night. He's going through all this. He goes, and Bruce Chen is tweeting from courtside. I'm like, how does that guy end up with courtside seats?
I liked I think Van Gundy and them were making fun of it, but the box that had Mike Miller, Tracy McGrady, and Bill Russell in it.
Yes,
I mean that was an eclectic group of former NBA players.
Well, I don't even, and they weren't even talking to one another, which just goes to show you the awkwardness that was probably in that room as much as it looked like on TV.
Yeah, it's sad that I haven't been able to go to a playoff game since I've been back, but you know, I was fine watching it from home, but it just seemed like as awesome of an atmosphere as they've had down there. And I know people raved about Game 3, but I think this one was on a different level.
216-578-0850 to get on board with us like Carl on a cell phone has. Carl, welcome to Browns Daily.
Okay. Hey, Jason, this is Carl Cash.
Hey, Mr. Cash, how you doing?
I heard you yesterday talking about your basketball playing, and I don't know if you remember that you were the first kid. I think you were the first time that that was when you ever played basketball. And
first grade?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was you played with my son Sam and a bunch of other kids, and I just wanted to say that what a great kid you were. And still are. And did you just get married?
I did, over the weekend.
Congratulations. Best wishes to you.
Hey, thank you. Give my best to your wife and the family over there as well.
I will. Take care, Jason.
All right, take care. Appreciate the Cash family.
It's good listeners, too.
They have a lot of – it's funny. I grew up with the youngest one and went through high school, and then I got to college, and I was in the men's chorus at Bowling Green, and I sang with two of the older ones that I didn't really know until I got to college.
Wait, what?
I did.
You were in the men's chorus at
I sang,
this out?
A little barbershop quartet
what?
Style. Oh, yeah, man.
Where are the recordings?
There are actually CDs on Amazon.com. I was on the Today Show.
And sold.
David Letterman. I know.
I'll even get 2 days shipping.
we've learned so much in the last 60 seconds.
And we have a new open for Cleveland Browns Daily.
Yeah, exactly. but no, we appreciate the phone call.
I'm
Mr.
like
Cash.
Crazily searching YouTube right now to see if there's anything out there right now.
There are some on there. There's no question. Let's see. On Twitter, the Boston Red Soxes came back from down 3-0 to the Yankees in the series. The year they broke their curse. This is the Cavs year. That's rode through Cleveland, Jay Rowland. Now, Fontana, you guys had on Francona today. And obviously, he was a big part of that big turnaround. He was the manager of the Boston Red Sox. What did he say? What was the mindset? And how does he think the Cavs' chances look going into Sunday?
He wished the Cavs best, and he said he hoped the Cavs, because talking about all the dignitaries there last night, Tito was there. They had a picture of him up there, so he was at the game. And he basically said just keep everything the same as far as your routine, like as a manager or as a coach. Try to keep the schedule, the routine, the meetings, all that kind of stuff. Try to keep that all the same. But he said for his players, he just hopes that what's the word that he used? That they just they're there for the moment. They're ready to play in the moment. So he had some pretty good advice. I'll tell you what. You give me a minute, I'll pull that sound up for you guys.
Perfect. That would be awesome. I just you take a look at this, and you take a look at you take a look at the game last night and the LeBron performance. We touched on it. We've talked about it a little bit. Is it better? Is this performance last night and the one on Tuesday better than the one that he had in Detroit where he scored like 37 straight points? Just because it is the NBA Finals instead of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, it's tough because that's one of my best sports memories.
Oh, my God.
And
it's
unbelievable.
One of the greatest nights ever.
And I think that moment is special because the Cavs hadn't gotten that far in it forever.
Ever.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And I think that his supporting cast was nowhere near what it is now. Detroit at that time, I think, were they coming off an NBA Finals appearance or a championship?
I think they won.
Yeah. So I think that one might not be able to be touched because that was like when he was emerging as this great NBA player, a legend at that time. So I don't know if I can put it above that yet, but I think it depends on what happens in Game 7. If the Cavs win Game 7, then that Game 6 performance takes on a whole new light.
Yeah.
And it still is among the best, but I think if you've sealed the deal now in Game 7, and largely because of that Game 6 performance, it's definitely on that level, if not surpassing it.
You know, he had scored, I think, 18 straight points at one point in the game for the Cavs. And then he had scored or assisted on the Cavs in 27 straight points in that same stretch. I mean, it's just a ridiculous –
And to me, it shows us how numb we are to LeBron's greatness that – for me, I didn't even notice that it had been happening. You know, I just noticed the Cavs were getting points and everything like that. I didn't, until they said LeBron has scored the last 18 points, I didn't realize that he was doing what he was doing.
Sure.
I mean, it just, it, whereas in game five, we're all of the Detroit series way back when, we knew what was happening because it was just something we hadn't seen before. We've seen this so much from him that now it just, it seems, as great as he was, it felt just, it's not as surprising, maybe, as it might have been when he was at the early part of his career.
Fontana, you have the Francona cuts for us?
Yes. So while Riz just asked Terry, like, what's not so much your advice, but how do you handle it as a manager? This is what he had to say.
What I think, you know, your hope is, I think, as a, when you're a coach or a manager or when you're in charge, is that the players embrace it. I mean, you know, it's nothing is for sure. You know, there are no givens, there are no assurances. Nobody has a crystal ball. But if your players embrace the challenge, that gives you the best chance, and that's what you're looking for.
I mean, he's right. At this point, I don't know how much coaching, tweaking, things that you do. I think it's you put your best players on the floor and go, there's not going to be a lot of rest. You're going to play a lot of minutes tonight. If it goes to overtime, you're going to see every minute on the floor. You just got to go out and you got to play. This is a night where you just got to go out and play. You execute whatever game plan you do end up putting together, whatever changes that you might make, but you got to go out and play. And that's what all Game 7 really is.
For them, you got to plan that Iguodala is going to play 40 minutes, even though he might
Correct.
Not. I mean, you got to plan for everything that Golden State is going to throw at you. You've got to plan for, you know, Maurice Spates. Like, he's a guy that plays really well in front of his home crowd and can give that bench some instant offense like Barbosa has. I mean, that guy's a thorn in the Cavs' side, even more so than Livingston was earlier in the series. You got to prevent any kind of role player explosion that the Warriors could have in this game, because those guys obviously elevate their game on that home court.
We'll take a quick timeout, come back and wrap up a very fast moving hour one. We want to hear from you at 216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily, at Andrew_Gribble. Or at BGSU Gibbs. It's Cleveland Browns Daily recapping a Game 6 win for your Cavaliers right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you in the Dog Bowl, celebrating a big Cavalier win last night. 115-101 over the Golden State Warriors. And great job by the Cavaliers, somehow winning two straight. It's amazing what a difference a week makes. A week ago, this past Saturday, everybody, I mean, you're down 3-1.
Oh, yeah.
And you had your chance to win to tie the series. Like last Friday night's game, the Warriors were terrible. The Cavs couldn't make a shot.
Yeah.
The door was open. And
I was moved on to 2016-17. I was trading Kevin Love to about 10 different teams.
Yep.
I was rebuilding the roster, wondering how much longer you can think you can win with LeBron, and just worrying about a Warriors dynasty, and everything has changed. Absolutely. It started with the Draymond Green suspension. I think that's where everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching that last week. I watched game four in a Cincinnati bar, and, you know, it was at the end of the game. The place isn't really as locked into games as people are in Cleveland. So I didn't even think there wasn't any sound. So I didn't even think there was anything to make of that.
Sure.
And then I was at a wedding, and I wasn't really following the news much that day. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, man. On Sunday, I was like, I didn't even think this was a possibility.
Yeah.
And then just that changed everything. And I think it gave the Cavs – I don't know where the Cavs' confidence level was. I don't cover the team. But you got to think it had to have boosted their confidence going into a game five that could have been
question.
It could have been a 40-point loss funeral. You know, that those games typically end up being that way. You know, it's just so – that the Green suspension was the turning point.
A lot of tweets coming in here. At BGS Gibbs and at Browns underscore daily, also at Andrew underscore Gribble. The Menudo Man, one of our regulars. Best part of last night's game was Sager. Hashtag Cavs. It was pretty sweet.
It was awesome. And I loved that he asked LeBron about being the MVP over Curry. You know, I mean, I think that was a great question.
It was an awesome question.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that interview went on as long as it did. And I think it went on simply because it was Sager and LeBron. It always those seem to be two, maybe three questions tops with LeBron. Sometimes they have the liberty of going a little longer with Kyrie or with Kevin Love. Or with LeBron, normally you get two or three questions, and that's it. And he stuck around for a while, so, and had some nice things to say at the end of it, too. And I thought it was nice that the Q recognized Sager last night during a timeout, I think between the third and fourth quarters. And
how about Tyronn Lue, too? Yeah, just the most stressful moment of the game
Golden
for the Cavs.
Golden State's making the run, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that was awesome.
But that goes back to what you were saying earlier about Ty Lue being calm and collected, not getting too high when the moment's too high, not getting too low when the moment's too low. Just going, all right, Craig, hey, I'm glad to see you here. I hope you're enjoying yourself. Where if I'm the coach, I'm going, I don't know if I can talk right now.
Yeah.
I got to figure out how to slow down the runaway freight train on the other side of this court.
Our pets' heads are falling off. Like, you know, it's just that was the moment where I was just – I had a buddy over at my place watching the game yesterday. I don't think we said a word between the third and fourth quarter. There was no communication.
That third quarter was long, too, by the way.
Yeah, and
it was excessively long.
The way that ended felt so ominous, and it was just silence.
Yeah.
in my living room for about 5 or 6 minutes.
Kevin Beard tweets at the show. The Warriors are self-destructing. The Cavs have found their game. Hashtag all in 216. Hashtag keep Aisha tweeting. The real Johnny Cupcake. Give CBD credit. Saying to hell with the Browns for a few days and talking Cavs, kudos. If you have a Browns question, we're happy to talk about it. We're happy to talk Browns. There were a lot of Browns there last night in the stands. Hugh Jackson was there last night. We're not saying to hell with the Browns. It's just if there's one topic right now in all of sports that the world is talking about, it's what's going on right down the street from us in downtown at Quicken Loans Arena, and that's the Cavaliers.
No, I think it's the Browns. We kind of embrace the whole city of Cleveland and embrace what makes the city tick. And clearly, this is a great sports town. And I think that we all see each other as, like, you know, we want this for. I think the Cavs would be the same way if the Browns were on the verge of it. I think the Indians would be the same way with us. You know, we all get along, and it's great to see everyone's, you know, and you don't, a lot of people grow up in this town, don't just grow up Browns fans. I mean, they cross,
yeah.
I mean, I'm all three. And so it's just how you grow up, and we're family here.
And I think for the first time in a long time, you see all three teams with some glimmers of hope. You know, you have the Cavs doing what they're doing. The Indians are in first place still. I think only by a game, but they're in first place. I mean, they're right where they need to be. And with the Browns, how can you not have hope with Hugh Jackson and what he's done so far?
Right.
You know, obviously they got to play the games, and we get that. But I've seen that him and that coaching staff take a team that won three games last year and make them believe they can compete this year. And they can compete for big things.
A similar time with all three teams kind of in different phases, but the year I remember is 2007, where it seemed like everything was going awesome for all three teams. You have the teams now are at different levels. I think the Cavs were overachieving at that point, getting to the finals. Maybe the Indians were the team that was the closest to getting it done, and that was one of the Browns' best seasons, 2007, since they came back.
Our good friend, Chef Chris Kern from up in Chicago. It doesn't matter if they win or lose. They've already proven who we are. We've gone past where anyone thought we would, especially with how the first two games of the series went. We're in Golden State's head, but most of all, they brought us hope, and that's a lot for our town. I can't disagree with that.
The big thing for me was just getting farther. Of course, I want to win, but you just didn't want to have your team fully healthy and have a worse result against the Warriors than like if you had gone out in five games. That would have just felt so much worse than when you took them to six with LeBron and 3.5 healthy guys. You know, the fact that you're going to the very end with the best team, regular season team in NBA history, I think it says a lot with where they've come to that point. We're done hearing about how weak the Eastern Conference is. That was a game one, game two storyline. We're done hearing about all that. You know, now I think the Cavs have solidified that they belong in this spot where after game two, everyone's like, oh, well, the finals happened last week with the Thunder and Warriors. And this is just like an extra celebration for the Warriors. And I think that now that narrative has gone away. I think that the Cavs have shown, I think that in my mind, they would have taken care of the Thunder in six. I think they're clearly, these are the two best teams in the NBA, and they're going to seven games.
We wouldn't be remiss on this day. You know, I know a lot of people, everybody's out celebrating and whatnot. We do want to share our condolences. Today was the memorial mass for Browns VP Brian Wiemeyer, who passed away from cancer last week, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the burial and everything is down in Florida, but there was a memorial mass today. The commissioner of the National Football League, Roger Goodell, was here in town, and we'll hear some sound from the commissioner coming up before the end of today's show. But, you know, our thoughts and prayers with the whole Wiemeyer family. He was a great guy.
I mean, you saw the things that were written about him after. The guy had Brian had so much of an impact on people all across the league, just talking about as reporters especially, talk about how he was an open book, talked to him, tried to get them educated on the business side of football, salary cap, things like that. Just you never heard one bad thing about him ever, and just beloved in this building and throughout the NFL.
Yeah, no question. And just, when I got here today around noon, the whole building was basically empty. Everybody from the team paying their respects, and that says something about the person. That was Brian Wiemeyer more so than anything else. So, our thoughts and condolences. I know some people here in this building with heavy hearts today. We go on, and, you know, he will be in our thoughts and our prayers, especially as we rapidly approach here the 2016 NFL season. More with Cleveland Browns Daily is next on ESPN 850 WKNR.